yourself. You don't have to do this, and you can put this thing down, and you can go back to the classroom, and you can be normal again, and you just know that you won't, and so does he. Squeak! The Death of Rats was sitting between Binky's ears, grasping a lock of the white mane, giving the general impression of someone anxious to be going. Susan raised a hand to slap him off, and then stopped herself. Instead, she pushed the heavy lifetimers into the rat's paws. "Make yourself useful," she said, grasping the reins. "Why do I do this?" "Squeak! I have not got a nice nature." Tick. There was not, surprisingly, a great deal of blood. The head rolled into the snow and the body slowly toppled forward.
"Now you've killed..." Lobsang began.
"Just a second," said Lutze. "Any moment now."
The headless body vanished. The kneeling Yeti turned his head to Lutze, blinked and said,
"That stung a bit."
"Sorry."
Lutze turned to Lobsang.
"Now, hold on to that memory," he commanded. "It'll try to vanish, but you've had training. You've got to go on remembering that you saw something that now did not happen, understand? Remember that time's a lot less unbending than people think if you get your head right. Just a little lesson. Seeing is believing."
"How did it do that?"
"Good question. They can save their life up to a certain point and go back to it if they get killed," said Lutze. "How it's done, well, the abbot spent the best part of a decade working that one out. Not that anyone else can understand it. There's a lot of quantum involved."
He took a pull of his permanent foul cigarette.
"Got to be good working out if no one else can understand it."
The Yeti of the Ramtops, where the Discworld's magical field is so intense that it is part of the very landscape, are one of the few creatures to utilise control of personal time for genetic advantage. The result is a kind of physical premonition. You find out what is going to happen next by allowing it to happen. Faced with danger, or any kind of task that involves risk of death, a Yeti will save its life up to that point, and then proceed with all due caution, yet in the comfortable knowledge that, should everything go pancake-shaped, it will wake up at the point where it saved itself, with, and this is the important part, knowledge of the events which have just happened, but which will not now happen, because it's not going to be such a damn fool next time. This is not quite the paradox it appears, because, after it has taken place, it hasn't happened. All that actually remains is a memory in the Yeti's head, which merely turns out to be a remarkably accurate premonition. The little eddies in time caused by all this are just lost in the noise of all the kinks, dips and knots put in time by every other living creature.
"How is their abbot these days?"
said the Yeti, getting to its feet again and picking up the pilgrims.
"Teething."
"Ah, reincarnation's always a problem," said the Yeti, falling into its long, ground-eating lope.
"Tea for the worst, he says. Always coming or going."
"How fast are we going?" The Yeti's stride was more like a continuous series of leaps from one foot to the other. There was so much spring in the long legs that each landing was a mere faint rocking sensation. It was almost restful.
"I reckon we're doing 30 miles an hour or so, clock time," said Lutze. "Get some rest. We'll be above Copperhead in the morning. It's all downhill from there."
"Coming back from the dead," Lobsang murmured.
"It's more like not actually ever going in the first place," said Lutze. "I've studied them a bit, but, well, unless it's built in, you'd have to learn how to do it. And would you want to bet on getting it right first time? Tricky one."
Tick. Susan recognised the country of Lanka from the air, a little bowl of woods and fields, perched like a nest on the edge of the Ramtop Mountains. And she found the cottage, too, which was not the corkscrew-chimneyed compost heap kind of witch's house popularised by grim fairy tales and other books, but a spanking new one, with gleaming thatch and a manicured front lawn. There were more ornaments, gnomes, toadstools, pink bunnies, big idea, around a tiny pond than any sensible gardener should have allowed. Susan spotted one brightly painted gnome fish... No, that wasn't a rod he was holding, was it? Surely a nice old lady wouldn't put something like that in her garden, would she? Would she? Susan was bright enough to go round to the back, because witches were allergic to front doors. The door was opened by a small, fat, rosy-cheeked woman, whose little currant eyes said, "Yep, that's my gnome all right, and be thankful he's only whittling in the pond." "Mrs. Ogg?"